Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Steele and Eisner podcast, Staying Aligned. My name is Alexander Eisner. I am your host today. I am joined by a legend in the chiropractic field, formerly of American Specialty Health, formerly in clinical practice for some number of decades. I won't give away the poor man's age, but currently serving as a director on the board of directors for California Chiropractic Association. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Dr. Lloyd Franzen. Doctor, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. We're excited to have you. And I'd love to start out by just hearing a little bit about you for those who are listening in who don't maybe know your background. Maybe you can give us the cliff notes on, clinical practice through your accomplished career.
Okay. Graduated from Los Angeles College of Chiropractic in 1970. Established a clinical practice in Thousand Oaks and practiced there for 31 years. Retired in 2001. And I was recruited by American Specialty Health to manage their 50 state and federal government legislative programs. I guess, given my background as the chair of government affairs for the California Chiropractic Association. And so my responsibility was to interact with state and federal elected officials, as well as non-elected officials in the healthcare space. So, talking about regulatory activities, legislative activities, and so on. Retired in 2014 from there, and California Chiropractic Association asked me to come back and take over the government affairs chair, and then was ultimately elected. This is my second term as the director of insurance for the for the association. I just might add, one of the things that was kind of there's a lot of highlights, but one of the highlights was that I was one of 14 doctors of chiropractic that were appointed to the medical board and served 8 years there for 2 year terms. And then I served on the board of examiners as well for 4 years. So, and here I am retired. It's all good. I hope you all be able to aspire to that at some time in the short term, as it were.
Absolutely. So that's a great lead in to one of the things I wanted to jump right into. And again, we have limited time on this podcast, so I sometimes dispense with pleasantries and jump right into the fun stuff. So we're seeing a lot of these MDDC practices, and I feel like we're seeing a lot more now than we ever have before. Talk to me a little bit about your thoughts on MDDC practices, your thoughts on MDDC practices as it relates to personal injury. How do you see the future of these medical doctor, chiropractic doctor collaborations and the corporatization of chiropractic care?
I'm a generally a proponent of multidisciplinary practices. I think there's economies of scale. There's opportunity to discuss patient care. They're probably, and again, in a multidisciplinary practice, they're probably having multiple types of treatment and trying to find out the best possible treatment for that individual patient. Unfortunately, though, in the PI arena, I've come across several MDDC relationships that either were not based on the benefit to the patient as it relates to their treatment, but rather the opportunity for increased numbers of advanced diagnostic studies that may or may not have any particular benefit to the patient in terms of their overall treatment. And many times it's the MD, unfortunately, is not an active practice. They're just signing off on a form, may not have even seen the patient. So there's some, I mean, I'm going to use the word schemes, but unfortunately, that may be the best term to use between those two relationships. And you have a situation where you have referrals back and forth, and sometimes there's some fee splitting and so on. So my advice is that if you're going to do a true MDDC relationship for all the right reasons, then you need to make sure that you're in compliance with virtually every nook and cranny as it relates to statute and regulatory activities, both on the medical side as well as the chiropractic side. And you mentioned the corporate practice of medicine, that as well. One of the downfalls I see many times is in the violation of Section 650 of the BMP code that has to do with fee splitting and referrals, paying for referrals and things like that. So that does occur. I'm not saying it's a huge amount, but I do see it, and I think that's a potential downfall for the chiropractic profession.
Yeah, I see it. I see it too. Sean and I teach ethics, and we talk a lot about some of these pitfalls that you're referring to. And I try to teach ethics from the point of view of anybody sitting listening to me probably doesn't need to be told, that obvious ethical violations are obvious ethical violations. It's more people who accidentally, maybe even well-meaningly walk into an ethical violation, thinking, well, I've been approached by a doctor, a medical doctor, and I think that a medical doctor and I could, have a good working relationship. And what starts out as maybe all the best intentions sometimes turns into a rubber stamp situation like you're referring to.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know much more to be said, unless you start to get in the weeds, but I think that again, if it's done for all the right reasons, you have to stay on that lane or in that lane. When you start to fall off that lane into various places and you're starting to hit the guardrails, you're in trouble. And law enforcement in healthcare is really a big issue. So they're looking for opportunities to squelch these because of the amount of money that's sucked out of the system in total as it relates to the opportunity for patients to seek reimbursement for treatment as well as injuries if required.
Sure. Now, shifting gears a little bit. I mean, we're talking about chiropractic trends in California. You certainly have seen them over your time in practice. It certainly seems like, and I think that the numbers bear this out, that there are way fewer chiropractors in clinical practice today than there were even 10 years ago, and specifically in California. What
That
do you
is,
think is driving that? Why do you think that is?
well, I think that number one in California, it's the political environment. I mean that in the broadest term possible, the regulatory requirements, statutory requirements, hiring practices, firing practices, sexual harassment, all of those things kind of put in the box together. I also think, and you have to go without it, it has to be said, is the rate of reimbursement, particularly with the many health plans contracting with outside entities, and the fee schedule is gradually ratcheting down, and so your expense to income ratio is taking a fall, frankly, and so there are opportunities outside of the state. That are a little bit broader, if you will. And I think those are just a couple of items that's there.
Anything that you think in terms of practice sustainability, any advice you'd give to, maybe a smaller or newer practice that's trying to keep their head above water, or maybe even, people who might be listening to this who are thinking about getting into chiropractic. I mean, what advice do you have for these people who are like thinking of getting into the profession or newly in the profession in terms of, surviving in California?
Sean and I joke about this because he calls me the old dinosaur, having graduated in 1970. When I started in practice, my office visit was $5, and so I would take a handful of ones in one pocket. Patient gave me a five and give him a one. Excuse me, it was $4. I gave him a one, so they had the change of $4. And at the end of the day, I'd subtract the right pocket from the left pocket. And that's how much money I made. And soap notes and stuff were almost non-existent. I mean, you had a little bit of information, and then, but I think the thing that sustained me was that, and it was funny because I was thinking about this earlier today in prep for this interview, was that my practice was probably about 90% referral, and of those were about 80% from medical doctors. I situated my office by a Kaiser facility, a huge medical plan or a medical group, if you will. And I got a lot of referrals from those folks. Probably work comp and PI were evenly divided, 5 and 5%. I did not actively go out and seek patients for a PI, just not what I wanted to do. Work comp, mostly those patients were patients of mine on the commercial or cash basis. And they injured were injured on the job, and same with automobile accidents, and they came to me for treatment, which I rendered, but it was never part of my game plan, in terms of a practice. It was more of a family practice, took care of four generations, and just had a really solid practice. I think that Again, I didn't use any gimmicks. It was, like I say, it was $4 for the first visit, $4 for the last visit. You gradually ratchet that up. And when I graduated, excuse me, when I retired from practice in 2001, I think I was charging $39. And again, it was $39. It was maybe 80 for the first visit, but $39 for everything else. And I just felt that that was a reasonable rate of reimbursement that patients could afford if they were cash patients. And again, many of the people brought in their kids and so on. And so they might not have had a full comprehensive healthcare policy. So much of their costs were out of pocket, if you will. So if that's the secret sauce, that's the secret sauce. You know, and I know it's more difficult now. You know, all the stories that you can hear, and I'll just tell you one. My dad, I think, was about 91 years old and had moved up to Northern California, and woke up one morning with a stiff neck. And so I guess I was out of town anyway. We couldn't connect. He went to a chiro, and the guy charged him $5,000 because he said he can straighten out his neck or straighten back, you know, return the normal cervical curve. My dad says, you know, I'm 91 years old. I don't give a crap about that. I just need to turn my head to the left or whatever the thing was. And so those are the kinds of things I think that cause disruption, if you will, in the profession as it relates to outsiders looking in. And I recognize that there are those who do these prepaid plans and they do it right. But unfortunately, we just have been tarred with a bad feather over the decades. And so these little nuances have an effect on the practice of chiropractic. And the old adage is, you know, I love my chiropractor, but I hate all the others that are in practice. So, you know, we need to broaden that category and also to deliver care that's pretty consistent across the board. You shouldn't have to guess at what type of treatment, what type of services that you're going to get that are going to be rendered by that chiropractor that you see. There should be a little bit better standard, a little bit more tightening to what we do. So there is a consistency over the 50 states. Personal opinion.
So speaking again about the sort of that culture of chiropractor, you were sort of a, you know, you come in, you know what to expect, you know that I'm gonna, you know, devote my attention to you. You're not gonna get any gimmicks, as you called them. I wonder your opinion on, and trying to be walk the line here and not delve too much into you know, the old school versus the new school. But it seems like every chiropractor's office I go into now, they have some new piece of equipment. Usually looks like a big silver box with a cable and some sort of wand coming out of it. And they are ex so excited to tell me about this box. I'm not a doctor, disclaimer, I don't know what I'm talking about, so take that for what it's worth. But it seems like throughout just my time in interacting with chiropractors, and no doubt in your time, there have been these sort of fads that come and go of this is the new hot thing to have in your office that will certainly do away with all manner of inflammation, and improve blood flow and help after accidents or sports injuries. And they're wildly expensive. We're talking 70,000, 100,000 people taking out second mortgages on their homes to buy this thing. And I am always really concerned that I am talking to somebody who has been scammed, to put it bluntly. And maybe that's a too aggressive of a term, but I just get very concerned that I'm talking to somebody who was sold a bill of goods, and that, you know, next year the same salesman's going to come sell them a new box with a new wanded thing coming out of it that does something new. And if it's a shock wave, or if it's a hot laser, or if it's a cold laser, or if it's a cryo, I don't know the efficacy of any of the words I just used, but I've seen them all come and go. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that sort of aspect of the profession. What do you think about these devices? What do you think about the doctors that are using them, and how that impacts sort of the longevity of chiropractic practices in California?
Well, I think that I'm old school. I admit it. My grandkids beat me to death all the time about how old-fashioned I am, and I readily admit it. I'm not particularly politically correct, and but I just know that the chiropractic care that I received when I was a kid, as an athlete, and so on, led me to the conclusion that chiropractic manipulative therapy, adjustment, spinal manipulative therapy, whatever you want to call it, is the number one treatment for spine-related conditions. Now, and so I can say with 99.9% certainty that no one ever walked out of my office without an adjustment or a manipulation of some sort, unless they were very acute or as contraindicated. But certainly, it was indicated they got an adjustment. And the bells and whistles, yeah, I lost some patients because of that, because I said, well, I went to, Dr. Joe down the street, and he used, like you're talking about, short wave, this wand thing, and and I said, so, that happens. I don't know that they got any better any faster necessarily, but patients like that kind of attention, if you will. And I guess sometimes I feel like DCs want to be in practice like a PT, because a PT, you go in that office and you see all those devices, and some of them are collecting dust in the corner, because many PTs that I've worked with are active therapy type folks, not so much on the passive side. And they get better reimbursement for that. I mean, frankly, and this is where the upside down comes, is that many times you get reimbursed better for the physical therapy that you provide rather than the manipulative services that you provide, which is a complete, like I say, upside down. But in any event, I think that I agree with you. Again, just from my stand, old school, is that manipulation is the single most important thing that you have to do. And I've reviewed PI cases, I've reviewed work comp cases, even commercial side, and there's a greater incidence of non-performance of spinal manipulation than there was probably 30 years ago, 25 years ago, or so, 20 years ago, maybe.
So you've done a lot of work on the government affairs side, and I'm just wondering what sort of trends you're seeing moving forward in legislation, particularly California-based legislation, if you know, but nationally as well. Is there anything to get excited about? Is there anything that chiropractors can just can grab onto and go, things are going to get better, things are looking up, there's legislation coming down the pike to blank, and that's going to make my life better, make my life easier, make my practice more lucrative.
Yeah, that's a great question. And without getting too far in the weeds, not taking too much time, but the Affordable Care Act, which is enacted in 2011, created what they call essential health benefits. And so each state was to identify a benchmark plan that included the elements of those essential health benefits. And unfortunately, there's only four states in the United States that do not include chiropractic manipulative therapy in that benchmark plan: California, Colorado, Georgia, and I think Hawaii. Everybody else has a benefit for chiropractic manipulative services as a standalone. And some states have actually unlimited number of visits. Most of them are 30 visits per year, maybe up to 35. So in the state of California, in the political wisdom of the people that lead this state, which is questionable at best, in my opinion, they chose not to include chiropractic services. They chose the Kaiser HMO 30 benefit plan, which did not include spinal manipulation. So we've been saddled with that for, gosh, I guess about 15 years now. And so there have been a couple of legislators in the California legislature who have said, we need to expand this. And again, there's a lot to it, but I'm not going to get in the weeds on that. But just as the illustration is that I talked with almost every legislator in the state of California on this. And again, I love my chiropractor, but I'm a little iffy on you guys being part of that health benefit package, which are for people that don't qualify for Medicare and they don't have employer-sponsored insurance. So it's that fo those folks in the middle for covered California. So what it does pay for, though, is it does pay for the exams and the physical therapy services that chiros can perform under their scope of practice. But again, it does not include spinal manipulation. So these legislators said, my three items are pediatric hearing, adult dental, and in vitro fertilization, and if there's any money left, chiropractic. Well, if you're not hiding under a rock, the state of California financially is in the toilet. So, the cost associated with all of those is huge. And again, the situation on the chiropractic side is not that much money. But again, if you pull it together and they look at all these benefit structures and not so much. And a couple of years ago, we were running a Medi-Cal bill, and people said, "Well, why are you doing that?" And the reason was because if ACA passes the Modernization Act, the Medicare Modernization Act, then each state within their scope of practice would have that benefit. So in California, under Medi-Cal, it would expand the scope of practice, expand the diagnostic ability, and expand the reimbursement. Again, the dollars weren't there to do it. And again, we're not talking about a whole lot of money. I think we're talking about, $20 million to add a chiropractic benefit in that space. But the legislature, for any number of reasons, didn't go for it.
Well, that didn't really answer the question of
Oh.
what do chiropractors have to look forward to.
Well, I'm being real. I'm
Maybe the
being
answer is
realistic here.
nothing, but hopefully there's some silver lining out there.
Well, I think there is. I can't go into in great detail because we are still meeting and discussing this, but we're following the or mirroring a lot of state, and well, I shouldn't say a lot. There's about four or five states that have passed legislation called a fair pay statute, if you will. And what it means is that if you're paying one provider X amount of dollars for the same level of service that chiros can provide under their scope of practice, you have to reimburse them at the same rate. So we're looking into that, and the challenge, frankly, is that we need to have data that shows that there is discrimination as it relates to the services provided by doctors of chiropractic and not being reimbursed as a full value. So, and the example I use is ultrasound is ultrasound. It's not medical doctor ultrasound. It's not chiropractic ultrasound. It's ultrasound, and there are protocols. Treatment protocols for the use of ultrasound. And we all have to adhere to those, or otherwise, you're not providing the appropriate care. Well, why does a PT get paid, whatever the number is, $30, $40, $50 for ultrasound? And in some plans, chiros get paid $5 or maybe $10. So there's a blatant discriminatory attitude there. So that's something that the association is looking at. And, I'll do an unabashed plug. What we need are increased numbers of members in the association as well as donation to the PAC. Unfortunately, those go together. Sometimes you just have to hold your nose and do it, but that's how you create the opportunities that you're discussing there.
There we go. I like that. That's a little, I like the plug and I like the little silver lining. Parity is I've been hearing rumor of a parity legislation in California for, God, I don't know how long, but a long time. So the idea that that might actually come to fruition would be spectacular. So here we are, last 5, 6 minutes of of our time together, and I gotta bring it home just because it's my bread and butter. I gotta bring it home to PI. The PI, I think PI has been largely unchanged in the last decade or so in terms of chiropractic. I haven't seen too many major shifts in the way chiropractors handle PI cases. I have seen with my own practice, there's a shameless plug, and some others, that there is a push to ensure that chiropractors are being treated like every other medical provider. They're not the first on the chopping block. They're not the deepest cut. We're not talking about pro rata distributions as much anymore. I'm not hearing this one third, one third, one third BS that I used to hear quite a lot. I'm wondering your take on the current state of PI and what the future might look like for chiropractors. I mean, you have seen it all, I have no doubt, from attorneys over the years, even doing, like you said, only 5% PI, I'm sure that's hundreds of cases over the course of a career, and you've seen it all. You've seen, I'm sure you've been screwed in every way that you can be, legally and illegally by less than scrupulous PI attorneys. And I just wonder what pearls of wisdom came out of that, and what you see moving forward.
Well, I think that I would say first that what we've come across, not with a great number of insurers here in California, but one particular company, I've had an exchange of letters and not very nice conversations. And what they have done, and they blame it on two things. One is the chiropractic claims that they see, which they consider to be, quote, outrageous, and what consumers are looking for. So they're writing policies that are putting a cap on chiropractic services, services that chiropractors utilize. So it is either in dollar amount or visit amount or time frames and things like that. Now, again, it's not a widespread practice, but you know, my sniffer says, and my, you know, my red antenna goes up and says, you know, this may become a thing. But to the extent that we talked about previously, it's just chiros need to really deliver good quality healthcare services at, you know, whatever reasonable prices are. And I'll just say one thing I've observed is that if you go to a chiro's website, they say, well, you know, the first visit is $50. It includes blah, 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 blah. And then the PI patient comes in and it's $350 for the first visit with virtually everything else. So, you know, I don't do social media, you know, stay away from it as much as I can. But when I have to look at that and you say, well, wait a minute, you know, he's accepting this, but not here. So there's that. But I think again that as those folks who are delivering good quality services to those injured people in PI cases, they're going to be the winners. Like I said, law enforcement is looking very strongly at schemes as it relates to doctor, patient, MDDC, all those kinds of relationships. And if it's a federal issue, the STAR clause and so on. So it's a rough course to meander. You know, there's landmines all along the way, but I think with good counsel like yourself and others that the chiro can keep their nose clean and really, again, deliver good quality services as we've always been known to do.
Yeah, and I really think that the good quality service, which you know I would argue wrapped up in that is good quality
Oh,
reporting,
absolutely. Absolutely.
should lead to better outcomes. I mean, you talk about kind of a landmines and minefields, but really, if you keep your nose clean, if you just do what you're supposed to do, which is, like you said, deliver good quality care, good quality, you know, your charting is good. Your, you know, your charges aren't outrageous. I mean, if you just keep your nose clean and your head above water and you plow forward and try to treat the patient in front of you and let the attorney do the law thing, I don't think there really are any landmines other than unscrupulous PI attorneys. But that comes in that, you know, A, that's a little bit outside of
Correct.
your thing. And B, there are ways we talk, Sean and I talk about it all the time, to sort of suss that out at the beginning, get a sense of, is this attorney likely to screw me? And at worst, they screw you one time and then you put their name on a list, you never work with them again. But there, it just seems like to me, if there were consistency, both in the quality of care and the billing and charting, all that, and in the standing firm behind those things, I did it right. I kept my nose clean. I'm not involved in any kind of scheme. I didn't split my chart. I didn't overbill. I didn't unbundle. I didn't do any of the things that's, you know, I could have done. And now I want to be paid. I want to be paid in full. I don't want to get screwed. I don't want, and I don't deserve to be, and I deserve to be treated like everybody else. If there were consistency across the board with chiropractors, I think we'd see a major shift in how chiropractors are treated in PI.
And I would say in all other third-party reimbursement across the board, that is the key, is its consistency. I can't say it's, you know, I hope it's taught in chiropractic colleges as it relates to that, but you know, once you get into practice, it's kind of a free fall and figure out what you need to do for what you need to do. But I think that we all agree on all of those points. I think the listeners do as well. We're not talking about a great amount of folks that are busting through the guardrails, but there are those who do, and ultimately there's going to be a price to pay at the end of the road.
Doctor, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, talking to me a little bit about this stuff. I realize it was kind of a shotgun interview all over the map, but I
Okay.
was really fascinated about your take on some of these things. In terms of a plug or a shameless plug here, we've been talking about doing it right and standing behind your bill if you do it right. We have our big annual seminar coming up. We call it our advanced seminar. It's on November 8th. It's in Anaheim. It's right by Disneyland. On our website, steeleisner.com/events, you can check it out, see who we've got. We've got these great speakers. It's 8 hours of continuing education, and it really is. It's called the future of trauma. But within that, we're talking about PI, and we're talking about how to do it right. And it is quality information for everyone from the brand new practitioner, even the student, all the way to people who've been in practice for decades. You're definitely going to walk away learning something. Sam Collins is going to talk about billing and coding. Sean and I will obviously be talking about personal injury. We've got an insurance adjuster. We've got a defense attorney. I really think we do a good job of putting on quality content so that doctors walk away from that going, all right, if I want to do this well, if I want to do this right, I've been given a roadmap of how exactly to do that so that when I get to the end, I can stand behind my bill. So I want to plug that. If anybody's interested in coming, check out the website, take a look at the speakers and get your tickets early. We always have an early bird thing. I think that's up now. So check that out. Other than that, Dr. Friesen, thank you so much. I really, really mean it. It means a lot to me that you came on and spent some time with me this afternoon.
Anytime, be happy to do it again. Thank
Awesome.
you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye now.